The Guardian.
Hello, I'm Max. This is Football Weekly Extra, the notoriously difficult second podcast. After the incredible success of the first one, will we now complacently hit a massive brick wall? If we do, it will be while we discuss the following. The Premier League, the greatest league in the world, is back. But who's going to win it? We'll get some worthless predictions from the Podders and preview the weekend's games. Danny Rose earns the same as Connor Wickham. Who is more likely to be Spurs' left-back this season? We learned this week that Real Madrid are better than Manchester United. I ask the Pod, is Marouane Fellaini Jose's most important player? Will Rafa be in his job in a month? How big is Isco's head? And what is the point of being a mid-table Premier League side? Plus some foreign your questions, and that should hopefully be about 45 minutes worth of Guardian Football Weekly. We have a panel. Philippe Auclair, hello.
Hello to you.
Now, you've got to go in 45 minutes because you're off to commentate on the Rally of Finland.
Correct.
Okay. But you don't have a driving licence.
I don't.
Okay. is that, in terms of jobs that you love, would you put that above or below Guardian Football Weekly?
Oh, below, come on.
Okay, right, okay. Nick Ames, hello. Happy new season.
Happy new season.
You've written lots of good stuff, and at some point I'm just going to ask you to read out all your articles.
That's fine. That should make 45 minutes of riveting entertainment for everybody.
Norwich's Paul McInnes.
Hello.
You were not on the first pod.
No, I wasn't.
So if you make a salient point on this pod, will you rip off your shirt in a sort of Nelson Oliveira way and point it in my face?
Oh, yeah, I will. And then when you come and kiss me on the forehead to placate me, yeah. I'll then, and then turn away thinking it's been resolved, I'll do it again.
Okay.
Right in your face.
Oh, I look forward to that. Barry Glendenning.
Hello.
We're spending quite a lot of time together.
A bit too much for my liking.
Do you think we'll, in like 2 weeks, we'll still be friends? How long do you think we've got?
I would...
Or would you say we're not friends yet?
I would suggest we're actually not really friends anyway, but maybe we will become friends.
Oh, well, I hope so. You've brought in a prop. I mean, we were going to save it for part three, but come on. Beautiful. If you bring
well,
something
I've got a big parcel, and it was waiting for me today, and it's from the people at Carabao, and it's a box, which, when you open it...
Carabao!
And it contains some turf and four cans of sickly sweet energy drink.
Do you think by the final of the Carabao Cup, that the fans will be united in a bit like how, you know, the Arsenal Chelsea fans all sang "If You Stand Up If You Hate Tottenham" at the Community Shield? Do you think all the fans will sing?
I have my doubts, but it was very educational because I didn't know what Carabao was, and now. Today I've learned it's an energy drink named after a Filipino water buffalo. Just don't understand why these large bovine animals are sort of symbolic of energy. You know, it's not what I think of when I see a bull or indeed a Filipino water
buffalo. I was chased.
Or a bison.
Power within. Maybe. Power within.
I was chased by a bull once and, and it had a lot of energy. Okay. More energy than I wanted at the time.
But you escaped.
Me and my dad jumped over a barbed wire fence.
Nice.
Yeah.
Were you wearing something red?
I think I might have had a pretty trendy red anorak at the time. I walked into the wrong field. It was my fault for going into the cow's field. Should we perhaps talk about football? We've had some tweets here. Andrew Yuley on says, was Danny Rose right to drop his bomb a couple of days before the season starts? Roast UK says, has Danny Rose recently graduated from the Ashley Cole Polytechnic with a diploma with dishonour in transfer skullduggery? Philippe, your thoughts on Danny Rose's interview this morning?
I actually enjoyed the interview and I was very jealous because it's one of these interviews you'd like to make yourself and in which a player says what he really feels. And I don't think the points he's making are totally crazy or we're nowhere near the, 55k a week, nearly crashed the car sort of thing, which was in Ashley Cole's autobiography. I don't think there's anything particularly wrong about it. No?
So the two things he says are, which have kind of caught on, is that, you know, he gets paid such little money is the same as Connor Wickham and that he wants Spurs to sign players that he doesn't have to Google. And I think both of those things wouldn't have been said if he wasn't quite happy at Spurs. I mean, I don't think he's going to go to Manchester United. Mm. I think, you know, he could get paid more money. They all could get paid more money, you know, even Harry Kane. But they're not, because they want to play for Pochettino and they want to build something at Spurs and take it into the new stadium. That's the whole rationale. That's why the only person who's left is Walker, and that's because basically Pochettino was happy for him to go. But, you know, the question as to whether they need new signings is obviously a salient one. And the point he's making about the squad strength in general, he talked about the Chelsea game last year, which was the cup game, where Conte left Hazard and Costa on the bench and then brought them on second half and they just did the business. I think he's right to make that point. I think they do have a strong 11, and where might these other players play? But it's a long season. You're going to be perming your team sometimes. But I wouldn't be surprised if Ross Barkley is still very much on the agenda for Spurs.
We like an honest interview, but then you know, Gary Neville's tweeting this morning saying, look, you should do this with Pochettino. You shouldn't do this with a newspaper.
I mean, we don't know that he hasn't.
Yeah,
that is the thing, and we have to remember that, because all sorts of conversations that go on behind closed doors that we, as even as media who like to think we have our fingers on the pulse, do not know about, and we can't pretend. And I've seen people say this already, that conversations like this don't happen all the time in dressing rooms between management and players, because they're all together every day. These conversations happen, and I don't want to demolish a straw man here, but I think we shouldn't get too angry about a player voicing ambition for his career, and I think by extension for his club, because they're symbiotic, they're interdependent at the moment. He's their employee. And I think Danny Rose, he's 27, wants to do the best for himself and wants to do the best for Spurs. And I think he's right to point out that it's a difficult situation now for Tottenham. They're moving stadium. We saw what happened at Arsenal when they had to make a readjustment like that. Will they be able to push the boat out now and supplement their squad? And I think Pochettino has not got a great record, by the way, in signing squad players or backups for his first 11, 12 or 13. I think more widely there is that concern. Who will they recruit and how? But I don't really think there's anything to kick off about here.
Tottenham go to Newcastle. You're engaged by Rafa Benitez, aren't you, Paul? And whether he'll still be there?
Yeah.
In a month, in two, at the end of the season?
I really rate Rafa. I was impressed by what he did in the champ, by staying at all, and then what he did in the championship, kicking out half the squad, buying another half a squad that was championship ready and basically not faltering on the way back up. You know, I think he's a manager who's taken a lot of different challenges in his career. He hasn't always sailed into the club where the checkbook rules. So I respect that. And I'm just been trying this summer to kind of work out what is going on with all the stuff that's said around Newcastle. I thought there was an interesting line in Louise Taylor's Newcastle Premier League preview, where she's talking about the problems they've had signing players, and how there's a guy called Justin Barnes, who she describes as an abrasive lawyer and long-term Ashley business ally. Which, if that doesn't put a shiver down your spine, it also made me think of like season 16 of Better Call Saul or something like that, when he moves into transfer negotiations. But there is obviously some sort of power struggle going on there. Benitez wants many more signings than he's had. He hasn't really been able to. He's taken Mikel Merino on loan from Dortmund. Florian Lejeune on the back of a good season in Eibar, but he's like 27, 28 and quite itinerant player. The biggest signing they've made is Jacob Murphy, who happens to have come from Norwich and is a good buy for 12 million, but still relatively unproven. They haven't got the players he would like, and the question is, it's him not getting those players, is that going to be a sign to him that he should walk, or is it an ongoing game he's playing to try and get the best out of the situation in the long term? And I'm inclined to think the latter, but it's still, there's a lot of noises around that. You know, I wonder whether it's him putting out these noises that suggest he might not be around in order to try and force Ashley's hand.
Barry?
Yeah, it's a weird one, because up until now the club has let Benitez do whatever he wants. You know, he admits he didn't speak to Mike Ashley once last season. You know, they had no dealings with each other. The fans love him. He's clearly a world-class manager who would get a good job elsewhere in a heartbeat if he left Newcastle. And Mike Ashley just seems determined to put these stumbling blocks in his way. And it's all sort of indicative of Newcastle's incredible capacity for shooting themselves in the foot. I don't understand it, but nothing that goes on there surprises me, because like their neighbours in Sunderland, it's kind of a basket case club. But they would be, if I was them, I'd give Benitez whatever he wants. And if they're just being snippy over a couple of million here or there, I think they're doing themselves a grave disservice, because if they lose him, he'll be very hard to replace.
How badly will they struggle, Nick?
I think they'll be lower mid-table. I think
you're not relegating them.
I'm not. Okay. I'm not officially relegating Newcastle. Okay, they are not going to be relegated by me. I think lower mid-table. I don't think they've got a great deal of quality, to be honest, throughout the squad. But they've got an excellent manager. They really, really have. He knows what he's doing. Both in, I think, giving noises out to people, as you guys were saying, and in managing the team. And I think they'll be around 15th.
Okay. The other game on Sunday is Manchester United West Ham. What did we learn about Manchester United, apart from the fact that they're not as good as Real Madrid?
Correct.
Thank you very much.
But what impressed me was the fact that they genuinely shook Real Madrid during the last 25 minutes of the game.
When they
brought, I was surprised,
Fellaini on and
yeah, and they went long, basically, yeah. and it nearly worked. And Fellaini had an absolutely superb game. I think the idea that he was going to go to Turkey at one point, I think we can forget about this, he's going to stay and he's going to be a very important player for Mourinho. The fact that with Fellaini and Lukaku up front, or Fellaini playing just off Lukaku, for example, which is possible, I think they're going to cause an awful lot of problems to an awful lot of teams which are better than them, such as Real Madrid. I think we learn more about individualities than the team itself. I mean, Matic was magnificent. The first 45 minutes, it was absolutely superb. We saw a good Smalling, for example. I really liked him. But on the other hand, you saw Lindelof looking a little bit lost, Pogba being as enigmatic as he's ever been, and so forth. So we learned, if you can learn from a Super Cup, when you know they're still very heavy-legged after the pre-season and so forth, playing, it's the Europa League winner playing against the Champions League winner, the fifth of the Premier League against the Spanish champion and so forth. So you can't learn an awful lot. But I think Mourinho honestly would have been really pleased with what he saw, genuinely pleased with what he saw.
There will be Manchester United fans with their heads in their hands thinking, the way that we will upset teams is by just playing dirty long
when
ball.
You're playing against Real Madrid, yeah, it's a ploy that can work. When you're playing against West Ham, you might be able to play more football, certainly, because you're not going to have Varane and Carvajal and Casemiro and Modric and Kroos in front of you every week. Thank goodness for that. So it shows that they have this possibility. And it's also, you're comparing a team here. If you compare Real Madrid with Manchester United, Real Madrid, the squad is really settled. That's more or less the team that won the Spanish League and the Champions League. This Manchester United team, it's still almost in suspension. You need for everything, you need everything to settle down. And this hasn't been the case yet. But it will happen, I'm sure of it.
Yeah, I agree. I just think in those big games, which there will be some of, particularly in the Champions League, but also I think in the Premier League, I think, you know, Mourinho's default is to play that way. He doesn't look to steamroller equal, never mind superior opponents. But I think in that game plan, Pogba's got to do a lot more. Mm-hmm. I didn't watch United consistently last season, but it turned out every game I did watch him, he was poor, apart from one, I think, and I can't even remember what it was. But he over elaborates on the ball too much. I think he's far too keen to make an impression that he's the marquee player, and I think he just needs to strip his game right back down.
Do you buy the narrative that Matic will free him up?
Yeah,
to be himself?
Absolutely, but he can't be himself. He's still got to take the optimum decision in tight moments, and I think particularly against opponents like Real Madrid, you can see he just didn't make the right choice more often than not, and I think that is something he has to learn, I think.
Nick?
I thought it was an important-ish night for Lukaku that he got that goal, tapping though it was, because he'd missed a very similar one straight after the second goal, which was a terrible miss. He blazed it over after another poor parry from Navas, really. And he's had that dozy moment in the first half where I think Herrera could have run onto his own touch and been almost through on goal on the right, and Lukaku was offside, about 3 yards offside, and ran onto it. I mean, that was brainless. I wouldn't have even done that in my Sunday team. But
would you have been in that position in your Sunday team?
No, I was a left winger. Okay. Left back.
Slowly relegating yourself very quickly.
We all diversify as we get older. But I think it was important for him because I can just see with Lukaku, with the fee, and with a few people maybe having questioned his record against bigger teams before, I can see that if there's a 2 or 3 game drought from him, there's going to be headlines that maybe shouldn't be. There's going to be pressure that maybe he doesn't quite deserve. We forget how young he is, how prolific he's been. So I think it was a smallish thing, but to get that goal does at least remind people that he can do it at that level.
He also showed, especially in the first half, when things were not going well for Manchester United, I was quite impressed with his play back to goal and the way that he was linking up. He was playing, you know, first touch, trying to, you know, giving the ball in the right spaces. Again, you know, it's very easy to go, oh God, they were completely played off the park and so forth. I think if you look at the game and you look at it's a team again that is yet to gel into anything. And I know it will be, Manchester United fans will say it was the same last year. Well, okay, come on, but you had a number of new players there, and I think the signs are extremely encouraging.
Barry, two head-based questions for you. How much did you enjoy Marouane Fellaini with a headband on looking like John McEnroe? I think that might be the greatest moment of the season, and it's happened already.
It was very enjoyable. I also enjoyed that picture of him with his face like, is completely picture, weirded yes. out of shape, which suggests those who say that heading footballers is dangerous may have a point. And I'm glad the wind didn't change at that exact moment. So he would end up like that for the rest of his life, as my mum used to say would happen to me when I was pulling faces as a child. And the other head-based question?
Isco, did you see this story that apparently Sir Alex, I think, they had a look at Isco but decided his head was too big for his body and didn't sign him?
Yeah, I'd never thought of that myself. I'd never looked at Isco and gone, God, that he must have an enormous pillow that he cries
it's
into
no, it's
every
not Big
night
Sam,
over
it?
The Charles size of Darwin. His massive head.
There is a Charles Darwin-esque quality to him, isn't there? Because it was about Jordan Henderson's walking ability as well that he'd observed.
His gait.
Mm. He'd observed that there was something dysfunctional about that. You just go around with a ruler measuring people's skulls and taking
you know
shots
how,
in a notebook.
Do you know how and why Real Madrid didn't sign Patrick Vieira? Absolutely true story.
His head too small?
No, his handshake was not manlike enough. Florentino Perez.
Oh, really?
There you go.
That's something.
You wouldn't imagine Vieira would have a little soft...
He's got a very soft handshake.
Has he
yeah,
really?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh. So Florentino said, no,
not
for
us. Not having
him. Yeah.
How interesting.
Yeah. He knows everything about football, Florentino, doesn't he?
They play West Ham, Manchester United. They've made some interesting signings. Nick, did you go and see Joe Hart and Chicharito?
I did.
How were they?
Yeah, the Joe Hart material is strictly embargoed until Saturday night. So
oh, really?
We can't talk about that too much here. Chicharito, excellent. Really good fun. Gave the longest press conference answer I have ever heard to the sole Mexican journalist in the room. Went on for about between 5 and 10 minutes, I think. It was something about Carlos Vela moving to MLS. At the end, he exhaled, gave a really long breath out, and went, "Sorry, lads," to the rest of us, who was like 5 or 10 of us. But no, really friendly, really up for the challenge, I think. He was stressing that he feels like the same player who joined United 7 years ago, doesn't feel like he's got anything to prove. I think there's a lot on his shoulders because West Ham haven't really had a reliable or, dare I say, that good centre-forward in the last 4 or 5 years. And
do you know how many they've signed in the last 4 or 5 years?
It's a lot, isn't
it's
it?
In double figures, yes. It's absolutely crazy.
And do you know how many games Chicharito went without scoring in the Bundesliga last season? 16. He was very streaky.
Presumably he just came on for 10 minutes in each of those games.
Yeah.
I think if he stays fit, he could be one of the signings of the season. I think you do very well.
I think all their signings are risky.
Arnautovic is clearly risky, isn't
yeah.
he?
Yeah, seven league goals last season. Not an awful lot for Stoke's most effective attacking player. He also had 11 yellow cards and 11 goals in total, sort of across international and club. And Joe Hart, you know, is not 100% reliable. There's a bit where we were asked to kind of pick a team that we might think surprised us by struggling this season. West Ham would be my side.
Apparently Slaven has had a hair transplant. I haven't seen this. Has anybody?
No.
Oh, right. Well, have a look out for that this weekend. Nick, you were going to make a more serious football point.
I was just going to round that by saying that I think Hart is a fine signing and I think Chicharito is. It's just what happens in between, and that still didn't really gel last season to me.
Snodgrass was a fine signing, like £10 million for a really effective player in the Premier League. Signing. Well, he's a very effective player in the Premier League. He was just by far the most effective player for Hull, the only guy who could keep them in the league. They bought him for £10 million, they knew exactly where they wanted to play him, and he's bombed out after 6 months. You know, there's something, so there's a vortex at West Ham where things don't always go to plan.
There is a vortex. I think with Snodgrass, he was on a hiding to nothing, replacing Payet, really, wasn't he? And he's a much less athletic player.
It doesn't matter if he gets if he delivers.
A disaster as well.
Yeah, exactly. Another really, really reliable Premier League player who was part of one of the best Premier centre back pairings in the league.
We should investigate the Snodgrass vortex as the season continues. let's talk about Chelsea, home to Burnley. That's sort of the dream start for anyone, with all due respect to Burnley. We didn't see a lot of their new men, Barry, in the Community Shield. We did see Courtois put a penalty over the bar, and it just reminds me of the greatest penalty of all time was taken by Kevin Pressman. Yeah. And Courtois needs to get some lessons from Kevin on if you're going to take a goal kick penalty, get your head over it. Gary Cahill was joking after the game about the size of Chelsea's squad and being much smaller than, you know, when the names came out, Chelsea had a few, and then Arsenal. On the radio, as I said, it's like that Fairy Liquid advert from the 80s where the table went on forever with Arsenal squad, but not Chelsea's. How do you see them going, Barry?
Well, I have them third in my table, my prediction. I have a feeling they might struggle. I mean, their squad isn't exactly threadbare. Nick was saying to me they've already loaned out 18 players, so, you know, it's not like they're looking around down behind the sofa for players if they need them. But I think Antonio Conte is kind of unhappy, hasn't got the people he wants yet. I don't understand why they sold Nemanja Matic.
Try it again, come on.
Third time lucky. Nemanja Matic to Manchester United. I thought that was weird. I don't know why they let him go, and particularly to a domestic rival.
Particularly if Conte didn't want him to go anyway.
Yeah, it certainly appears that way. So, you know, obviously they will finish in the top six. I have them down to finish third, and I've City and Spurs ahead of them.
Any advances?
I have them down for champions, which I'm slightly kind of rolling back in my head on, but I just think Conte's the man. Conte's the man who gets, you know, he's got the Mourinho-like approach to every single match. He takes it incredibly seriously, analyses it incredible detail. But he's just got more, they go for it more, his teams go for it more, and I think they'll take more points in the league. There's lots of weakness, you know, their squad's weak, they're going to be playing in the Champions League, blah, blah, blah. But I think Matic went because Matic wasn't going to play in the first 11. If Bakayoko was fit, it would be him and Kante.
Well, I can't see, for the life of me, I can't understand how it's possible to have Kante and Bakayoko in the same team. They're not complementary at all, whereas Matic and Kante, yes, you can see that, but Bakayoko, no. He's very raw, technically not that great. He's got magnificent power, and on his day he can really create havoc. But again, technically pretty raw. I have to say some of their transfer policy has had me shake my head. Selling Nathan Ake, I genuinely can't understand that. The boy has got class. I mean, it's obvious to everybody. I'm not sure why they've taken Antonio Rudiger. I don't think he's as good as... It's not because he's an international and he played for a big club, which, you know... Willy Caballero is certainly a downgrade on Asmir Begovic. You look around, you think, good grief. We still don't know what the situation is with Diego Costa. Eden Hazard is injured until, what, mid-September, something like that, at the earliest. I think I have them out of my top four at the end of the season.
Wow.
Unless something happens before the transfer window closes. Because we're talking, you know, about ifs. All the clubs we're talking about still have some time to get reinforcements. And in the case of Chelsea, they have to do it quickly.
I think on a basic level, no Hazard and no Costa is a massive problem for them. No matter what the personal problem with Costa is, no matter how he's been agitating, he produced last season regularly. Hazard, obviously, they're a completely different team without him. I think we saw that on Sunday as well. And to be 2 months or maybe 6 weeks without him at the start of the season is a bigger blow, I think, than people are taking into account for.
I think they've got enough to roll over most teams in the Premier League and to roll over the group stage of the Champions League. you know, and that will hopefully give them time to adapt Morata to the team or, you know, give Batshuayi a run.
Are they going to be rolling people over if Morata is still adapting, though?
Yeah, I think that's what I mean. I think your bottom half of the Premier League, they can win without really, you know, with just through organisation and a tactical plan.
Roman Abramovich has split up from his third wife, so commiserations to him. He divorced his second wife, Irina, in 2007, and Chelsea won the FA Cup and the League Cup in that year.
There you go, great. So
I don't know if there's any link with that. You know, if he'll spend more time at the training ground because he's got, you know, he doesn't have to be home to watch romantic comedies. Barney Roney has tweeted, why does Abramovich keep getting married? It costs billions. Just share a flat, cohabit, hang out. Don't sign anything. I don't know if that's, you know, his experience
such a
either.
Dad tweet that.
It's possible that Roman Abramovich believes in true love and, you know, just hasn't quite found it yet.
Son, I've got to listen for you. Don't sign anything. Just don't.
Can we have a quick word for Burnley?
Yeah. Obviously, I was just moving on to them. Far away.
I just think they're in trouble.
They've bought Jonathan Walters, Phil Bardsley, sort of, you know what you get, Premier League players.
Yeah, Jack Cork for 10 million quid. I mean, that's not value.
Charlie Taylor's a good player. They've also bought one of my favourite names in football, Adam Legsdins. But they lost Andre Gray yesterday.
Yeah, Andre Gray and Michael Keane. I mean, if we're talking about Chelsea losing, that, you know, for really matters for Burnley. And, you know, they only took 11 points in the final 15 games last year. It's not like they sort of trickled out of the season.
Relegating Burnley?
Well, I actually had them 17th, but it could be lower.
And the chances of them having the kind of form at home, which they had.
Yeah, it was a miracle.
It's very unlikely.
Yeah, I had Burnley bottom before they sold Andre Gray, actually.
Are they higher now or lower?
They're now sub-bottom.
Oh, right.
Subprime.
Subprime Burnley. I think, as you say, they've signed a lot of good lads. And as you say, Charlie Taylor is a really good player, actually. But I think Dyche gets so much out of them by winding them up so they're good to go, especially at home. And I think when you've not got much more than that, or when other teams learn to match that effort and intensity, then you've not got a lot else going for you. And maybe they've got a great reinvestment plan for Gray. I mean, it's 2 weeks. We don't know who they're going to bring in. But I think they've got a long way to go before they can be away from a drop.
And the thing is, it's not a given that other teams can match your determination and your tactical organisation. You know, there will be a lot of chaotic teams in the league again this year.
Arsenal v Leicester, the first time the Premier League kicks off on a Friday night. Do we like this idea, Barry? It's fine with me.
I am against Friday night football in general. I don't mind having the Premier League curtain raiser on a Friday because, you know, we're all sort of palate cleansed and refreshed and have watched other sports during the summer and are ready for the relentless slog of the football season again. But generally, I think everyone deserves, you know, one night off. Last year, I pretty much...
Thursdays, though. I mean, it's true.
Well, last
true,
year...
Nobody watches the Europa League unless it's your team, and then you barely watch it.
I like to watch all the Kazakhstani teams and see who, you know, which cut-price Brazilians they've bought.
But do you actually find it more interesting?
Yeah, I find it more interesting than watching the Champions League.
Oh, that's interesting.
But it's not something I feel tremendously strongly about. I will be tuning in to watch Arsenal v Leicester.
I'm glad Kelly Cates has got her own TV show. I think Kelly Cates is great.
She is very good. And after that, you'll be watching Carling In Off The Bar, I presume.
Have they got a hot new presenter?
Yes, Danny Mills, and I'll be alongside him chatting about the game, sort of repeating what they've said.
Yes.
Just in a more casual environment. Look, no Sanchez for Arsenal. He's out for 2 weeks with an abdominal problem. Philippe, do you believe he has bad abdominals, or do you think he's
just got a problem?
There's got to be a point at which Alex's abs give way, because the guy has been playing. Talk about having a day off. I mean, he hasn't had a day off for what, 3, 4, 5 years or something.
Do you think
like
the
that?
Abs would be the first thing that would give way?
I'm wondering. But perhaps, I don't know.
I mean, I don't have any, so I don't know.
Well, same here.
But do we think he'll still be there when the window closes?
I've said that for the past 6 months, and I'm still hanging on. I think he will stay. Also, I think Wenger has said, that he kept on talking when he talked yesterday at the FWA event in the West End. And he said, we're going to see more and more players going to the end of their contracts, because the market has completely changed. And I think that was a really, really good point, that it's something we might have to get used to, that players are going to stay until the end of their contracts, because you're playing the market in a way, you're gambling on your value in 12 months' time that you will have picked another 15, 20, 30%. And so, and he was saying, when I talk to the agents, that's the feeling I get. They're trying, they're keeping their clients in the same club as long as they possibly can, and then big payday at the end of it. So
I asked Wenger about that, because he's been saying it a few times. Actually, I asked him about that last week from the other end as well, that clubs will want to keep hold of players because they won't want to pay the transfer fees because they're ridiculous. And that's, you know, it works both ways.
Yeah. So, I can well see him in an Arsenal shirt in 2-3 weeks' time.
And could this be the year?
They have one of the, they're ticking one of the boxes, which is not playing in the Champions League. Leicester didn't, Chelsea didn't, to name but the two last two champions. Also, he clearly wants to take the Europa League as a kind of European Carabao Cup. And so it's all focused on the Premier League. I thought at one point Olivier Giroud was going to leave and that it would be a huge loss. Regardless of what you think of him being, you know, the number one striker at the club. And I talked to Olivier after the Community Shield. I really got the impression he was going to stay and going to make it very, very difficult for Wenger not to play him, especially in the World Cup year. He wants to stay in a club that he knows, an environment he enjoys and so forth. So I know Arsenal fans have been there so many times. But yeah, it could be a year in which they do certainly much better than last, and I would take them as being very serious contender for the top three.
And with that, Philippe, you have to go and commentate on the Finnish rally.
Absolutely. And I'll listen to the rest of the podcast.
Yeah, I hope so.
A little bit later.
Yeah. Quickly, for the rest of you, thanks, Philippe. Leicester City, what do we think? For a Leicester City fan, Nick, you know, you've won the league, then you've won the Champions League. What do you do this year?
I guess you do the thing of trying to push on towards the European places and doing well in the Cups, but it's difficult, isn't it? They've had that high that they're probably never going to have again. They had that little flirtation with problems before Ranieri left last season. They also had the Champions League to keep them busy. So this really is the first potentially quite nondescript season that they'll have had in since they were in the Championship, really. They've made one or two good signings. I think Iheanacho, I think £25 million, decent enough player to come in, showed a lot of promise at Man City. I think if he can be the main man somewhere, that's the key. Can he step up and be the main man, which is what they need, because players like Musa and, to a lesser extent, Slimani didn't really do that last season.
Harry Maguire's a good signing.
Harry Maguire is a very good signing too, you're right. And also Ebora, I think he played against them last season in midfield. But yeah, where do you go from here? It's quite a common question for half of the division, I think.
Oh, we'll get onto that in the next part. That's the end of part one. We'll be back in a minute with part two. Welcome back to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly. Brighton, Manchester City. A lot of people have Man City as their favourites. Breaking transfer news. Paul, Brighton have just broken their transfer record for the third time this summer, signing Jose Izquierdo from Club Bruges for around £13.5 million. Colombian winger, 16 goals last season. They've also bought in Davy Proper, which is useful.
He's a proper player.
He's a proper football man. And Matthew Ryan, the Australian keeper.
And Izzy Brown on loan from Chelsea. I'm going to this game on Saturday.
Okay.
Very interested to see it because has there ever been such a plethora of attacking riches available to one side in the Premier League as Man City have now? Bit worried about what they do when they don't have the ball, but then that's not really Pep Guardiola's top priority. I think Brighton, you know, I think they've been buying quite interestingly, as well as the players you mentioned. They've kind of picked up a couple of defenders from Ingolstadt in the Bundesliga. Low key signings, but obviously, you know, well scouted. They've got a great team ethic. Houghton's been around the Premier League before. I think he knows what is required to keep a team up. I think it could be a very interesting first day test for City, actually, because Brighton will be really pumped.
Barry,
curious to see how Chris Houghton approaches this season with Brighton. I'm sure Paul can confirm, and when he was sacked by Norwich that season, he was just really overly cautious and probably wouldn't have lost his job if he'd gone about, set his team up with a bit more attacking flair. And curious. You know, the same thing happened to Brian Kerr when he was manager of the Republic of Ireland. I think he's a better manager than he showed when he was manager of Ireland. He was more concerned about not losing than winning. And I'm curious to see if Chris Hughton has a different approach this season with Brighton to the one he had with Norwich.
You've got to respect the point, as Sam Allardyce would say. I think particularly as a small club in the
Premier League. But if you're not getting the point, then...
Yeah, but you set yourself out to not concede first. Respect the point. And I think he will do that again. I think the problem with Norwich when he went down, I was always a Hughton supporter. I think the problem with... He spent a lot of money on attacking players, you know who.
Oh,
and yeah,
Ricky.
And yeah, he could knock one in off his arse.
Oh, where is Ricky Van Wolfswinkel?
He's banging him in for FC Basel.
Is he?
He's gone to Basel. He had a really good season for Vitesse Arnhem last year. He's back on the up.
I think Hughton is one of those managers, and I'm not directly comparing them, but a bit like Carlo Ancelotti, maybe. What he inherits, he continues and makes a good job of, rather than having a particular style of football or thing of his own. And I think Brighton actually played some good stuff last season in the Championship. Very, very good methodical passing. They up the tempo when they could as well. And I think what Brighton have done is a bit like Swansea. They've had a lot of managers come through in the last few years for various reasons. But with each new one that's come in, they've kept the same style, the same, I hate the word, philosophy, and slightly tweaked it and upgraded on it.
I disagree. I mean, I think Hughton did a real good job at Brighton. I mean, they were lower mid-table when he came in. He kept them up first season, you know, second season playoffs, third season promotion. I mean, I think he's done they're a really, really effective competitive team.
Yeah, I agree.
Good news for Manchester City fans. They will not face punishment from UEFA this season if their fans boo the Champions League anthem after a change of regulations. So they can... But maybe now... They won't want to boo it if they're not going to get in trouble. What's the point of booing it? Watford Liverpool. There's a I think it's a three-man envoy from Barcelona in London trying to get Philippe Coutinho. Not quite sure why they didn't go to Liverpool to try and get him on the radio. I can't remember who I was listening to this morning on the radio. Just saying, look, it's a done deal. You know, he'll go because if Barcelona want him, they'll get him.
I think he's not going to do a Van Dijk. He's not going to write a letter. He's not going to sit out of training. He's hedging his bets to a certain extent. I think what's happening now is the groundwork is being laid for him to move next season.
Okay.
Liverpool get to keep him. Everybody celebrates. Liverpool have another season, hopefully, of progression, and then he goes. And then Liverpool sign Keita next season too.
Do you think Liverpool have had a good window? It's good they've got a left back, isn't it? Andrew Robertson, who's a good player. Salah, Solanke.
Solanke's a good signing for the prize.
Barry, not bothered.
Not particularly, no. We'll see. Time will tell. You know.
Gareth asks on Twitter, is there an argument that Watford have had the best transfer window in European football?
No. But I think it's an interesting change of tack from them, isn't it? Like they're not so much using the model of shuttling players between Udinese and Granada so much, which I think, as well as being good from, I'm guessing, a dressing room point of view and a cohesion point of view, it's quite good for the journalists too, because I did a few of their games last season, and you look on their team sheet and see a player on there and think, my God, I forgot he was there, because they moved them to and fro, had a massive squad last season. But they've been sensible. I think they've brought in Andre Gray, haven't they? They've brought in quite a few more.
Will Hughes.
Yeah. Will Hughes will provide some great ammunition. It's about time.
And Nathaniel Chalobo as well to play defensive midfield. So they've actually bringing an English spine in as well, and I think that's a good move. There's a lot of people predicting Watford to go down.
I think I did that last week,
and I'm like, I can't quite see that, because I think their squad underperformed last season. I think they've improved it this year, and I think Marco Silva, yeah, okay, didn't complete the job we hold, didn't get an away win, but his home, the home form was great, and he made that team click within like days. I think they'll be fine.
Barry, we have given Everton seventh place already. Has anything changed your mind on that this week?
No, they will finish seventh.
Does anyone want to disagree with either of us?
I put them sixth.
Really?
Yeah, I put them ahead of Arsenal.
Ooh. Nick?
I'm going seventh as well.
But they play Stoke. Their signings have been very interesting, I think, this summer.
Yeah, I mean, they've been really interesting. There's a question of whether there might actually be too many of them for it to work. Sandro and Rooney, you know, I think both great. I think Rooney is, I don't think he's over. I think there's another season in him yet. But who's going to play that? But how are they going to play going forward? Nobody, neither of them are there to can replace Romelu Lukaku. So how are you going to make that work? I think Michael Keane's a good signing, but you know, Jagielka's just signed a new deal. He's not a replacement for them. Klaassen could be class, but you know, or it could be another Jordi Klaassi, who sort of comes, you know, well regarded from the Eredivisie and doesn't necessarily make it. So lots of money spent, and if they spend 50 million on Sigurdsson as well, I mean, that puts them second to only to City, really, doesn't it, in spending? I mean, not net, but outgoings. It's a lot of players, a lot of change. So yeah, maybe I'll have them seventh, actually.
Nick, you wanted to ask, what is the point of being a mid-table club? Which is when we looked at the, you know, Palace, Huddersfield, Southampton, Swansea, West Brom, Bournemouth. I know, like, Huddersfield would be very happy to be a mid-table club, as would Swansea probably. But it's a good question. If you're a fan of West Brom or Stoke and you're established in the Premier League, but you're not going to win it, what are you going for?
Well, exactly. And I mean, there were 15 points between 7th and 8th last year, which may prove to be an outlier, but I've got a feeling it's not going to be. And I think teams like West Brom and Stoke are very interesting. West Brom in particular, they finished 10th, they were 8th for more than half the season, I think. And there's a lot of complaints from supporters about the style of football, the Pulis ball, if you like. And I get that. It's Tony Pulis. We know what he brings. We know what he can't do.
Gary Megson's there now with him, so that'll all change.
With him, exactly. I kind of think you could change things up at West Brom. You could change the management structure. You could bring someone else in. And you could make them different. You could definitely make them different. But can you make them better? And I just think it's really difficult now. There's a glass ceiling, I think, of around 8th. And I think another example, Crystal Palace last season. They've now brought in De Boer, fantastic manager, talks wonderfully about football, has a wonderful grounding, is going to get them playing some lovely stuff, I'm sure. It will be a really nice season at Selhurst Park, I think, in the next year or two. But what's the end game? What is the end game beyond... I mean,
but you're starting to, you know, what is the point of existence, ultimately?
It's getting a bit bleak here, but what I mean is that there's going to be, I think, nine or ten clubs in that division. You could throw them up in the air and they could fall in a different order every time. And beyond the prize money, does it really matter? And I think if we have too many more years like last year,
Do you think people will stop going? What?
There might be consequences for the league in the long term, and I know that's quite far-reaching, but I am quite concerned about that little gap that's opening and those clubs that have pretty interchangeable prospects. I don't think it's good for anyone. They're all healthier and richer than they've ever been.
So I wrote a lot about the Premier League this summer and spent a lot of time talking to people who are, you know, evangelical about it as a broadcasting success story, right? If you think about the Premier League not as a spectator sport in grounds, but a brand of television entertainment, you look at it in a different light, because what you would see from that is the top seven and, you know, massive investment. You know, Leicester could become an eight or something like that. You know, a top seven, they are competitive, they're glamorous, they're watchable. You make an appointment to watch their teams play. And grounds are more sold out now. That's the TV element of it. People want to watch it on TV. You can then take those TV viewers and put them in grounds, so that Leicester or let's say West Brom, they'll sell out most of their games because people will be competing to try and get tickets to watch Man United play. There's enough people who want to go twice or three times a season that they'll end up going five times a season because they need to earn the points, or they need to be the members in the place to make sure they're in it with the lottery. So I think that, yes, those mid-table clubs, they're never going to win the league. That Leicester thing was a freak. But what do they do instead? Try and win cups, try and get into Europe.
But not enough of them try and win cups. That's the problem, isn't it?
But I think you'll see that more.
Do you think that will change?
The only thing about that extended mid-table is they're very close to relegation. Mm. So they can't necessarily switch off in the league either.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with anything Nick says, but I do think if you're the kind of person, just because Stoke are under discussion, who bets on football managers to lose their jobs, I think Mark Hughes might be a good bet for the first manager to go, because Stoke's opening run of fixtures, I think they in their opening eight fixtures, they play five of the top seven or top six. Top seven last season, and possibly six of the top eight, if I'm correct in thinking Southampton came eighth. And I think they could find themselves anchored to the foot of the table 8 games in, and he might get his marching orders.
Been bad starters the last two seasons as well.
Do you want to predict some things? Premier League winner, Paul?
Well, I'll stick with Chelsea.
Barry?
City.
Nick?
City.
Top scorer?
Lukaku.
Is this like when you go on iTunes to download a song and then you forget all songs that have ever existed?
What is music? I will go with Lacazette.
Oh, interesting. Nick?
Lukaku.
Okay. A surprise package?
Newcastle.
I think Huddersfield would surprise people by staying up.
Yeah, I think that's true.
I was going to say exactly the same words as Barry, and I think, yeah, given what I've just said about mid-table, there won't be too many other surprises. So,
Underperformers, you've said West Ham already, Paul. Barry and Nick, do you want to add to that?
Newcastle.
I think maybe it could be Man United not finishing that high up in the top six despite spending that amount of money.
Okay. Breakout star.
I wonder where they'll be. I can't really see one imminently coming, but you know, maybe one of the Chelsea loanees, like Izzy Brown at Brighton. But I think Ben Woodburn at Liverpool would be my choice.
Okay. Do we have a best signing?
Well, Nemanja Matić is the only one I've seen play so far this season. So I'll go with him because he was very impressive.
All right, that'll do for part two. In part three, Carabao Cup, Football League, your questions and a bit more. Welcome back to Guardian Football Weekly Extra. There we are.
Carabao.
So the Carabao Cup, Samu Saiz is sort of the most interesting story, who scored a hat-trick for Leeds with his first three shots in his Leeds career. Although he did apparently spit at one of the Port Vale players during the game, which the Port Vale manager said sort of made them lose some focus. But I always have this debate with ex-footballers, which, you know, when they say spitting and they say that is literally the worst thing any footballer could ever do. And I tend to think...
Snapping a cruciate ligament.
If the footballer doesn't have a communicable disease, then you can just wipe it off with a flannel and you're okay. So I would rather be spat at than headbutted.
Yeah.
I don't know if anyone... I mean, it's obviously not a very nice thing to do.
No, but saliva is generally sterile, isn't it? So,
is that right?
I think.
I guess so. Yeah. I've never really thought about it.
It must be.
Must it be?
I don't know.
I mean, you must be able to get some diseases from being spat at.
We're stumped here, aren't we?
Mm. I'm going to go out on a limb, and I could be... I'm no doctor.
No, but you are. Your dad's a vet, Barry, so...
I suspect you could get maybe hepatitis from saliva.
I think it's not wrong. Sterile.
It's not
sterile. You get mono, don't you, from snogging? It's the kissing disease, isn't
it? You can't sterilise, you can't like sterilise something by just putting it in your mouth, Nick, and just going, there it is.
Giving it to a baby.
Yeah. 34 years and now you tell me.
Anything happened exciting in the Football League, Paul? I went to Exeter 1, Cambridge 0. It was sunny, which was nice. The two stewards got engaged at half time.
Oh, that's lovely.
And but, you know, you've done the whole of pre-season, then 5 minutes in, one of our defenders... You know how just a few times a season a cross goes in the box and a defender just punches it away for no reason whatsoever? So our season basically ended after 5 minutes.
I went to see Wolves play Borough.
Okay.
Two teams, you know, looking upwards this season. Wasn't a bad game, actually. I think standard the champ will be pretty high this season. A lot of good players in the league. A lot of good coaches. And Wolves... surprised me that I went to see Ruben Neves, the Porto 15 million signing, and Cavaliero, the exciting winger, blah blah. Cavaliero wasn't even on the bench, and there was this guy Diogo Jota, who's on loan from Atletico Madrid, who was their star player on the day, and then two Brit wingbacks who I'd never heard of before were really effective in the game. So I was pleasantly surprised by Wolves, and I had high expectations of them. Borough to me looked stodgy. I'm not sure. They certainly in the current formation he's got, he's not going to get the best out of the players. Samba Longo aside, who was effective, not going to get the best out of his signings. And already he's sort of saying, he said some things in his post-match about, you know, we're gonna batter some teams this season. We're gonna get many points to play for, and we're gonna get many points. A bit like, well, you're already on the defensive after one match, which was a narrow away win. I'm not entirely sure about Borough.
You know, I took in a bit of championship action myself. I went to Ipswich v Birmingham. I'm an Ipswich fan, but I'll talk about Birmingham because obviously it was Harry's, the first game of a new season for Harry, who is already down to the bare bones. Very, very slim squad there. Didn't have any options from the bench. They didn't look that fit either, to be honest. I'm not linking the two, but they very much tailed off as the last half hour kicked in, and Ipswich were by far the better side. But I think he's got a difficult job there. They don't seem to be getting the new additions over the line that the investment they've had might suggest. They were quite clunky. A lot of 6 foot plus players. I was expecting something a bit more gung-ho from a Harry team in the championship, but I've got a feeling that unless players come in soon, Harry's gonna
is gonna he commuting every day there. Was he just going in like 2 days a week?
Sandbanks to Birmingham is not an easy
killer,
one, is it?
Isn't it? Why is he doing it?
I think there's quite an interesting thing this year about like the English coaches versus the foreign ones, because
lots of foreign in the Football League, aren't they?
Yeah, lots of foreign in the Football League. And I met Andrea Radrizzani, who is the new owner of Leeds, and he was talking about why he's appointed a Dane who used to manage Hapoel, and he says, well, I looked for English coaches and I couldn't find them. And if you look at the recent, you know, promotions to the Premier League, it's all been foreign managers. But you've got Gary Rowe at Derby, Steve Bruce at Villa, and Harry at Birmingham. And I think that will be very interesting to see where those three clubs end up at the end of the season, because a lot of the other, and Gary Monk at Borough as well, the rest of them have all got foreign coaches in charge.
There's quite an interesting lineup on Saturday, I think, between two of the more visionary foreign coaches. I think it's Fulham versus Reading, Jokanović versus Stam. And I think Jokanović at Fulham has had a few issues recently as well, with maybe interference from upstairs over an analytical approach to his transfers, and it's all looking a little bit ropey for them there. And obviously Reading didn't start too well last weekend. I think they lost at QPR, wasn't it? So if I had a championship game to look out for this weekend, it would be that game, which is a repeat of their playoff meeting as well.
Not Norwich versus Sunderland.
I watched Villa Hull last Saturday. It was our old pal Leonid Slutsky's first match in charge of Hull, and John Terry's first match for Villa. Terry was solid, dependable, which I suppose is exactly what they want from him. Wasn't impressed with Hull in the first half. They were very laboured and didn't seem to have any sort of plan. And then classic game of two halves, they turned it around in the second half and finished all square. So, it was quite interesting that Villa finished with three centre-halves on the pitch, Terry, Chris Samba and James Chester. Samba was thrown on up front for the last couple of minutes. And it just led me to sort of think there's no place in the squad for Micah Richards. He's fifth choice centre-back and fifth choice right-back at Villa. And, you know, just thinking how the mighty have fallen. And I know Nick wrote a very good article the other day about Samir Nasri, his sort of fall from grace.
Who is still at City?
Yeah, very much so. He's actually, I think, been quite sharp in pre-season, but doesn't have much chance of forcing his way back in.
Some questions on Twitter. Mark says, if you were a gifted player, all right, which would be your dream club, the one you'd play for free?
Barcelona.
Norwich City.
Ipswich Town.
But really? I mean, because I would say Cambridge, but I would say Barcelona, actually, if you're thinking about it. Because I reckon if I would play for Barcelona for a few years, you could always go.
They'd take you.
Yeah, they'd take you, wouldn't they?
Yeah, they probably would, actually. Yeah, that's
but, you know, if it was, you could have one season.
One season? I don't know, because I find Barcelona boring. There's the ubiquity of them as the world's greatest club. It's just not that cool. I think of, like, Napoli or something. Yeah, go and do a Maradona.
I'd go Borussia Dortmund if we're going down that route. Do a bit of Bundesliga, enjoy the yellow wall every couple of weeks, be part of the youth project they're doing there. I'm a bit old for that, but still.
What position? You'd be back at left back, or you'd play?
I think at my age I'm now a left back, yeah.
All right. Thanks very much for your time, Paul McInnes.
Thank you.
Barry Glendening.
Thanks.
Nick Ames.
Thank you.
Thank you to Philip Auclair. We'll be back on Monday. Barry will play us out with the Carabao Cup. box.
Very difficult to care about that.
We needed a pun, and we finally had it.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.